iTunes International. From the golden sands of Bondi Beach across your world.
Hello there, this is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around your world. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia. We have two correspondents in Tasmania, Joe and Paul Volter, who are part of the band The Sign. They've been with us as correspondents for the last 3 years or so. I interviewed Joe last week about her life, and this week I'm interviewing Paul Volter. Take a listen. And welcome to the show, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. How about yourself?
I'm alive and kicking, as we said off air. I'm just actually poured myself a glass of red wine because it's 1 o'clock. It's 5:10. I think that's okay. Would you concur?
Oh, definitely so. I think anything past 10 o'clock in the morning is fine.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm with you. Now, you're obviously, as I said in the intro, yourself and your wife, Joe Volta, are from The Sign, which is a fantastic band. I can't say enough about this to my friends and family. And, you know, if you're listening anywhere in the world, just go to thesign.com. Now, you're from Rochester in New York. And I just read a bit about Rochester. It's known as the Young Lion of the West and also known as the Flower City. Rochester is also known, it's known for so many things, for its unique and impressive history in photography, xerography, whatever that is, and optics, along with its leading role in manufacturing, research activities, and impressive educational resources in both traditional and evolving imaging science. Is this all true?
Well, yeah, of course. Kodak is, her home is Rochester.
Oh, really?
And Bausch and Lomb, I believe that they're the ones that they're talking about for optics.
Uh-huh.
Some of the first dental equipment and chairs were made in Rochester. I think it's called Ritter, the Ritter Company. So if you see, and they probably, I don't know if they make them anymore, but the University of Rochester is there.
Excuse my ignorance, but what is xerography?
Probably Xerox.
Oh, is that Xerox? Oh, really?
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Rochester is a huge industrial city.
Ah.
And some of the largest names in corporations were born out of Rochester.
It's interesting you say it's an industrial city. Here in Australia, as you would know, Newcastle is an industrial city and it's on a beach. It has a beach. Is Rochester also attractive for tourists?
I don't know why you would have got to go to it. aside from Kodak. Mm-hmm. And, well, look, every year since I can remember, they had something called the Lilac Festival.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge park that's nothing but lilac trees. And when that's happening, it is fantastic. And wow. The smells coming off the lilacs are so beautiful.
And do you, I know you're not, you're in New York, obviously. You get very cold winters and very hot summers, unlike here in Australia, Paul.
Yeah, we sure do. That's why I left Rochester to go to sunny LA.
Oh, of course you did too, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Now, I just want to ask you some questions that I asked your wife, Jo, last week here on our airwaves, here on Bondi Tunes International. What did you want to do when you grew up? At what age did you decide what you wanted to do, or did you not?
I'm still trying to figure that out.
Right.
No. Wow.
Because I knew I wanted to be in radio from the age of 7, you know. I just knew instinctively. But some people don't. I mean, most people don't, I would say.
Yeah, no, I really didn't. I know I always loved music, and my first instrument was the trumpet. Mm. And that was probably when I was in grade 5.
So what age would that be?
How old are you when you're in grade 5? 9 or 10 or something.
Oh, okay.
Yes, but yeah, because you know the school had a music program, and all they had was basically brass instruments. There was no guitar or anything, so I played the trumpet. And since then, I knew that I wanted to play music, but I didn't really know that I wanted to do it for a career. Probably I got more serious when I was 15, maybe 14 or 15, after playing the guitar, and then thought, yeah, I really like being in a band. I'd like to play music. But then again, I left school when I was 17 because I didn't know what I wanted to do. For a life thing, I know I didn't want to do what my dad did, or he worked at a factory, and I certainly didn't want to work at that factory, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do, so I joined the Coast Guard.
Oh, so when you say you left, now here in Australia, we've got a thing called the HSC, which is equivalent, if you're listening in the UK, to the A levels, or in Ireland, to the leaving certificate, which is what you do when you leave school. If you want, well, you can either go on to tertiary education, which of course I didn't. But what's the equivalent of that in the United States?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Do they have?
Everybody finishes high school. Everybody finishes year 12.
Okay. And
And then goes on to either going to find a job or going to college. We call it college or university. I think the difference is that you pay for the university, and college is kind of more community sort of a place.
That makes
Yeah,
sense to me.
and you learn different things in college, and you learn in university in America, from what I can remember,
That's interesting. I never knew that. Of course, I after my leaving cert, did not go to. I actually failed my leaving cert because I was so interested in radio. I was sneaking out of the boarding school in the middle of the night and going into a pirate an illegal radio station in Limerick in the west of Ireland. I was not destined to pass my leaving cert because I was going to bed at 4 in the morning after sneaking out the window at 2 a.m. doing a radio show, coming back, and then I'd only have 2 hours sleep.
I can
Like,
relate to that totally. It's exactly what I did.
is that right?
I didn't go to the radio station, but I learned songs on my guitar in the basement with a record player. It slowed way down so I could learn the leads and things to like Jimi Hendrix and stuff. And yeah, and school wasn't good for me. Even from grade 9 to grade, I guess I was going into grade 11 or grade 12. Anyways, found out that I probably had missed more than three quarters of the school year.
Wow, you're kidding me.
No.
What about your parents? Did they know, or did
Well,
they not
yeah,
mind?
Dad didn't know. I don't think he knew. And my mom was, she would write me notes.
Oh, how cool is your mom?
Exactly. And they thought, boy, you're a really sick kid, aren't you? You're a sickly boy.
Were they worried at all? Like, oh, your father didn't know. Was your mother concerned about, because most mothers are, I was brought up in children's homes and boarding schools. I didn't really have parents per se. Well, they were alive, but I didn't have a mother or father to stop me from, from not studying, if you like. Did your mother, it sounds like she wasn't too concerned about this.
I don't think so. I mean, my father, I'm not sure he even went to high school,
Right.
and maybe he did, but certainly didn't finish. And same thing with my mom. So I don't think that they were really concerned that much with getting an education. And my older brother, he was the one that, did it all and went to school and.
That got you off the hook, right?
Well, yeah. And my younger brother was the same as me. So we were both pretty much reprobates back then, growing up in the other side of the tracks of Rochester.
Is there a class system in America?
Is there a class system?
Yeah, because you know the way there is in
Course there
Britain. It
is.
comes from it all. I mean, the British took over Australia like they took over America from the natives. And I, here in Australia, there isn't really a class system. We don't care about that stuff. What about, I just wonder about America. Is there a sense of the lower classes, the upper classes, the middle classes, or are you all just middle class, either rich or
Oh,
poor?
heck no. No, I would say from lower middle class. There were those that lived in the factory, that lived in your small houses, and grew and were probably on the western side of the city. Then there are those who were on the east side of the city, who probably lived in the larger houses. who were the middle class, the upper middle class, and then you had, I think it was called, on the east side of the city again, called Ambassador Drive, and that's where all the, you know, the really well-paid executives lived, and probably the politicians, and they had mansions there.
And of course, there's the Hamptons, isn't there? I mean, I keep seeing the Hamptons in the movies, you know, like that's all the rich people with their summer homes, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's in Long Island.
Right. So, okay.
So east of New York City.
Right. And have you been there?
Yeah, that's all my my mom's family moved from Brooklyn because she grew up in Brooklyn. And they moved to Long Island. My grandmother lived in Long Island. All my cousins were in Long Island, a place called Lindenhurst, which is actually, you know, I mean, it's relative in distance, but it's not that far from the Hamptons.
Right. I just, it's almost like the Hamptons are stereotyped in movies, you know, like the rich people own houses there, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
Generally speaking, what was your childhood like? I mean, did you enjoy your childhood? I ask this question because so many people didn't. I mean, I loved my childhood, even though I was in children's homes. I still loved my childhood. How was yours?
Yeah, I loved my childhood. I was a real firecracker back then.
I bet you still are.
Well, I grew up in the crap side of the city. I was a bad boy.
Yeah, and please explain bad boy. Did you get into drugs or did you drink during, you know?
No, I was never a drinker, believe it or not.
Is that right?
Yeah, I never, you know, all my friends, we'd get, they'd get people older to buy them beer and, you know, maybe I had some beer, but I really didn't like it. I didn't care. My parents never drank. I think my dad, I've never seen my dad drink. And the only time we ever had alcohol was at the holidays, like Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, things like that. They really never drank. And so I never really drank, but you know, I did get into trouble with the police. I broke windows in factories.
Did you ever sneak over the walls of factories and stuff like that?
Oh, heck yeah.
Really? What would you do? I mean, could you get in and stuff like
that? Yeah, I would get in through the windows. And there was one where I lived was a dead end street, and at the end of the dead end was a with railroad tracks. I mean, there was I took the railroad tracks everywhere. I used to hop trains, you know, freight trains, and take it into the city and take wherever. But anyways, before the railroad tracks was a glass factory, and they made bottles and things. And inside the warehouse, I used to make forts with the boxes, you know, like the. The boxes of glass, and then like hide inside them.
And, were you with your mates and that kind of stuff? Yeah.
Sometimes, but a lot.
Or you do it by yourself?
By myself, yeah, because so, like hide and make forts and things.
Our North America correspondent, one of them is Thomas Booker. He lives in Texas, yeah. And he's the only liberal in Texas, I think. He talked of, you know, he didn't drink that much as he doesn't drink much either. He just has a couple of beers. But as a child, he didn't do the drinking thing either. But what he did do was smoke a lot of grass.
Yeah, how old was he?
I don't know if, you know, he's probably listening to this. Thomas, I don't know if you smoked a lot of grass or not. But I remember.
I started at 15.
Is that right? Because Thomas was in a class of people who smoked a lot of grass. I have to be careful with my words here. You started at 15, and was it you know, people say that grass is not addictive, and I would probably concur with that, actually. But did you smoke a lot of grass, and was it an expensive hobby for you?
No, I didn't smoke a whole lot. Mm. Every once in a while, I'm probably 16, 17. So from the Coast Guard era to joined the Coast Guard when I was 17. So from 17 to 20, 21. I smoked a lot of grass.
So it was just a phase kind of thing?
Yeah. You know, every day, get up, smoke a joint or smoke. But I never smoked a lot. Like, all it took was two puffs ever to this day. I don't
That's
need
it. That's it.
I don't need any more than that. I would never ever smoke a whole joint by myself. You know, so, and
Right.
same with alcohol. I've been drunk 4 times in my life.
You're kidding me. I get
No.
drunk 4 times a week. That's not true. True.
I hated the feeling. I hated the throwing up, and I hated the
Oh, you
spinning.
don't.
Oh,
Did
God.
you throw up from drinking alcohol? Were you
Yeah.
drinking spirits or something? Yeah.
Yeah, spirits mostly.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
can't drink spirits. Okay, let's play a song, Life Garden. And would you mind just telling our listeners what that song's about?
I don't have a clue,
Go on,
Joe.
you can do it. It's about life in a garden.
I don't know. She would have to tell you about
Oh, okay.
it. I just play them and arrange
Oh,
them
yeah, okay.
and do my bits for them. It's a far cry from the version that she wrote on acoustic guitar. So.
On that note, do you guys, you're obviously a partnership in life, as in married, and you're a partnership in a two-person band. Do you disagree on some? It sounds like she does a lot of the lyrics in these songs.
Yeah,
Is
mostly.
that right?
Yeah.
And do you ever sort of disagree like bands do with each other?
No, not really. Not no, no. I just love taking her songs and then putting my trademark on it, I so to speak, I guess, if you want to say that, my involvement. Because I always, even though I write songs, it's I think she's a better songwriter. And I just enjoy her songs. So,
That's fantastic.
yeah. So there's no arguments then. You know,
Okay.
I still write. I still do record
Sure.
my songs, and some couple sometimes we write together. I might have a rhythm. I might have some chords and things like that, and I'll just keep playing. Like I remember, I think she picked that one, did she? That one became about where I was practicing Travis finger picking, and I came up with a chord pattern that I would practice on, and I would practice on it every day. So I'd be in the living room on my Martin guitar playing it, playing picking, 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 picking those same things over and over again. And then Joe was in the sunroom, which is just a room away, hearing me, and she came up with lyrics and a melody, and I thought, oh, that's beautiful. Let's yeah, that, and sometimes that's how it comes together.
Okay, well, let's listen to Life Garden and find out exactly what this song is about.
Life got
Okay, now, if you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International in Sydney, Australia, and I'm talking with Paul Volter from the band The Sign, thesign.com. Go there, they are so very talented. Now, when did you first go overseas, Paul? Because obviously you live in Australia now, in Tasmania. I've not mentioned Tasmania once in this interview. These guys are in Tasmania, guys. When did you first go overseas and what was that like?
Wow. I'm trying to think. I think the first time was 1987.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it was then. I don't think I was. Well, yeah.
Overseas. I know you were living
in Canada, and we might go to.
Oh, that's another country. Yeah. But it's not overseas, I guess.
No. I'm trying to think if when I was in the service, when I was in the Coast Guard, I spent a lot of time on the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, is that right? So when you said the Atlantic Ocean, obviously your next port of call would be my country of Ireland. Did you go out into sea or did you just go around the coast?
I've spent a lot of time in the North Atlantic, which was a horrible place to be.
Cold?
Yeah, cold and hurricanes. And
good.
I remember 50-foot waves, 50, 100-foot waves, actually.
Do you get seasickness?
I was sick for a week and they had no pity on me at all.
They didn't care. They took the piss out of you, probably.
Yeah, you just have to do your job. So I was basically sick for a week and then I didn't get sick after that.
So you got used to it?
Yeah, you get used to it.
Yeah. Right. And you work in the band and you're in front of audiences. Have you ever got stage fright at all?
When I was 14 years old,
yeah,
I got stage fright. I got, things you remember, and I remember it to the day.
Yeah,
we played this auditorium, and there was heaps of people there, and the curtains were closed, and all I kept saying was, "Don't open the curtains! Don't open the curtains!"
You were 14, yeah.
I was shitting myself.
Yeah,
and then the first song we played was Midnight Hour. And the first chord I struck, I lost my pick.
did you? Is that right? And did you sing at that point?
No, I didn't. No, we had a lead singer.
Did you make money from these gigs?
You know what? I really don't.
Maybe they just bought you drinks.
Maybe we did. I just don't remember. It was too long ago.
Yeah. Oh, so did you? Have the day job then? And what was it if you did?
I was 14.
Oh, you were 14 at that point. Sorry. So let's move on to a little later than 14. I mean, child labor is not a good thing, is it, Paul?
but that was the only time I ever got stage fright.
Right.
That's it. Finished and people were clapping and they loved it, that was it for me. You know,
so
that
it gave you confidence.
I never got nervous again after that. Even playing, big places and opening up for big bands and stuff. I couldn't wait.
I think you got all your stage fright out in one gig.
Basically. I did.
and it's an interesting age to do it because, I was very young when I started broadcasting, about 17, sneaking out of the school, as we mentioned earlier on. And I was never really nervous about... I was a newsreader, and newsreading is a very difficult job. It's one of the most difficult jobs you can do. But they always shoved me into the newsroom because I guess I could read. Because a lot of DJs can't read, believe it or not.
Really?
But I did get nervous in my late 20s. In fact, I had a nervous breakdown live on air. And that's very frightening. But I got over that, and it took a while to get over it. So I guess we all... us types in the media, it must happen to everyone at some point. Mm. Now, you obviously met Jo somewhere, your wife.
Yeah.
And I've asked Jo this last week, but for listeners who do not know or didn't listen last week, where did you meet Jo?
Well, talking about first time going overseas, it was Sydney.
You're talking Centennial Park.
Yeah, well, we went to eat at some restaurant, and I can't remember what the restaurant was. Maybe it was a Thai restaurant or something. But how it came about was that I had a vintage guitar shop in Hollywood, and
As you do.
we used to deal with a fellow in Sydney. We used to sell him guitars, and we became really good friends. And my partner and I thought it might be an interesting idea to open another Voltage Guitars in Sydney.
Is that the name of it?
Yeah, Voltage
I
Guitars.
love it, and your name is Paul Volta. I love it.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So, fly to Australia and get with Charlie, and then try and find a business that we could buy. We actually did find one. And I can't remember. Newtown seems to be
Yes.
might have placed for some reason. It might have
Well,
been there.
that makes sense. It's the inner west of Sydney, a very arty kind of place, Newtown and Glebe.
I know. Yep. So we did, and we talked to the guy, and we kind of were going to arrange things. And so we said to Charlie, it's like, so where are all these Australian women, Charlie? I just got separated in the things of a divorce with my first wife. And so he took us out to dinner, and we're sitting in the car, and he's got, yeah, I've got this girl that's going to come out. And so we get to where she, I don't remember where it was that she was standing, but there was this thing. I'm looking out at, and I was sitting in the back, and I look out the window, and I see these legs. It's like went on forever in this little short leather brown skirt.
This is around 87, is that right?
Yep.
Around 80s, yeah.
And I just she would just went kind of like melted. Oh my God. So that's where we first met. And so we went to dinner, and she was talking. She had to talk to Lloyd for a while, who was my partner, and then she talked to me for a while, and then she would have to talk to Lloyd for a while, then me for a while. And then at dinner we found out that our birthdays were the same
I
day.
know. Isn't that fantastic? And Joe did tell me last week, on our show last week, that it was a bit like you had to talk to both of the girls and both of the guys, kind of thing. It was like sounds like it was very organized, but you kind of broke the rules, didn't you?
So that's where I met Joe. And then on the way, dropping her off, Charlie pulled off the side of the road, and I said, I'm going home with you. You do. You know, when the opportunity is there and you miss it, that's it. So I thought, you know what? I'm not going to miss this opportunity.
And your friend just drove off. Did he tell you he was driving off, or what was going on there?
Just drove off, and that was it. And Joe's looking at me. I'm looking at her, go, okay. I think she said you could sleep on my couch or something.
Right.
Yeah.
This reminds me of the movie When Harry Met Sally. I don't know if you're familiar with that from 1989, and the fact that they interview Harry, who is in love with Sally, but they don't quite get together till the end of the movie. But the thing is, they ask him questions. He has a completely different take on their history than she had.
Well, of course,
And I just it's interesting because we interviewed your wife Jo last week. Interesting because your stories match. So I think you're kosher, Paul Volta.
Well, I would hope so, because that's how it happened.
Oh, dude. And that was it. That was it. Yeah.
And we never did get the store, so we came back. So I went to New Zealand after that, after spending time with Joe there, and I hated. Yeah, but there were some good things about New Zealand, but mostly it was sheep, and
Well.
this is the way we wash our clothes on the radio. And I thought, what? Where am I?
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people listening to us from Europe and North America might think that. I mean, I made the same mistake. I thought, when I was a teenager, that Australia and New Zealand are the same. They're not. They're as different as Ireland is from Britain. They're
That's right.
so different.
Yeah.
I've only spent one day in Auckland in all my 33 years. I was on a cruise last year and we stopped in Auckland for a day and that was it. So I don't really know New Zealand, but I did marry a New Zealander and then divorced her and then went out with another girl from New Zealand, Auckland. And, you know, but I only got to New Zealand like 2 years ago. So did you know enough about Australia to know how different New Zealand was? Because you hadn't been in Australia that long.
No, I didn't have a clue. Didn't have
you just didn't like New Zealand?
Rotorua was fantastic.
Oh, smelly place, I believe.
Yeah, the Waitomo.
They got springs or something?
Waitomo, the caves where the glowworms were.
Oh, yes.
That was amazing. There was a place called Craters of the Moon, and I'm not sure where in New Zealand exactly these places were, but I just remember them. And that was like you stepped into the world a million years ago. That was amazing. There's just some amazing places in New Zealand.
But not a nice place to visit, right?
Well, good place to visit, but I wanted to see Joe.
Oh, I see.
I wanted to see Joe again. So I was like, I left early to go back and see Joe.
And, you know, it's interesting to be, as I mentioned, you know, bands have arguments. It's very famous to know that, you know, there's egos in bands, but it sounds like you two are very compatible and get on pretty well.
Yeah, well, we're the total opposite of each other.
but that's good. You know, I'm a broadcaster. My girlfriend's a writer. Yeah. We're both in the media, but they're different kinds of media. Totally different. I mean, my girlfriend won't go on the air. She's scared of microphones. Well, I don't know if scared's the right word. She just doesn't want to do it. And I'm not a very good writer. So, you know, but we're very opposite in many respects because she's a big reader. I don't read at all. Yeah. But opposites attract is a very true term. Would you agree with that?
I would agree 100%.
Yeah.
So
it just balances everything out.
Yeah. And we're just lucky that we both, you know, play music and do it well together. So I think we do it well together.
Oh, you definitely do. I can confirm that. I love your music.
With the sultans of swing. sometimes I play Creole.
Just joined us. I'm talking with Paul Volter from the band The Sign in Tasmania, is where he is. Now, I'm interested in what you've recently got interested in, which is animation. And I've watched some of your animation, which you've done to your music. Tell me how you got into that. And it sounds like you're an obsessive type like I am, and you're really into it.
Yes. Well, what happened? I like building, I like building and renovating. And I was working on a friend of mine's house. We were building him an enclosed veranda. And I was working on the ceiling, nailing wood panels to the ceiling. So a lot of neck back, that kind of a thing was I'm nailing the nails in. And that was in December. And in January, I think, I just pulled a weed, or I just pulled something in the garden, and messed my neck up. So that was really bad. I couldn't even move my left arm, and I went to the hospital.
Oh my God!
Eyes, and they did all that stuff, and they, my C4, C5, C7, and C8, or something like that, were pinching the nerves.
Oh, sounds so painful.
Oh, well, I tell you what, if they didn't have the drugs that they had me on, I couldn't sleep in bed for a month. I had to sleep on my reclining chair with my arm down to my side, and that was the only way I could sleep.
Oh, that's awful. That's just awful, especially everyone has to sleep. Trust me, I find it hard to sleep. So, when you've got a sore arm, it just makes everything really hard.
Oh, yeah. And I couldn't even squeeze a ball with my hand. So I thought, I may never play guitar again.
Oh, shit.
So what am I going to do? And I just got into doing, I found this program. I thought, well, animation could be fun. And I quite honestly don't even know how I got onto that program or thought about animation. But I thought I needed to do something I could do with my right hand, aside, you know, from doing what we normally do with our right hands to keep us occupied.
I can't believe you said
I needed to do something else.
Yes.
So I got into that and
Much
video
more
editing,
productive, I'm sure.
which is
Anyway, so you got into
that's
it.
satisfying.
Yes. Yes.
So that's how I got into that, into animation and video editing, because I thought I wasn't going to play guitar anymore. And I accepted that fact and just thought, well, what could I do that's still creative? To keep the creative juices flowing. And that's how I got into animation.
I love how honest you are about, I've got stage four cancer, as my listeners know, and I don't talk about it very much on the air, but unless it's appropriate to the purpose, I am very realistic about things. Now, playing guitar is your life, Paul Wolter, and you accepted quite quickly that, just like me, I accept my health situation because I'm a realist, and you are definitely a realist when you thought that you may never play guitar again and just accepted it, probably reluctantly, but you moved on and found out about animation. Was it difficult to do this animation? Because I noticed that you've depicted Joe, and it is very like Joe, tall, skinny, and very beautiful, of course. And I love the way do you pick sort of certain things in the animation to show what a person looks like.
Well, I try to. This the latest one I'm working on. You'll see in a little while, and that I picked characters that look like someone.
Right. Okay. So you didn't have to mold the image yourself. It just was from a selection of images, I imagine.
Yeah, you can get characters, you can buy characters, and you can buy your scenery, and you can do all this other stuff, and you can download, you can actually find it for free, but you have to do a lot of fixing up through another program I use called Krita. It's kind of like Photoshop, but
Can you just spell that for our audience?
yeah, Krita.
Krita, okay.
Yeah, and it's free.
Oh, okay, that's good.
And it's a lot of, it's one of those open source programs, and a lot of artists use that program. It's definitely made for art.
It's interesting because I got into Linux for a while. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Sure.
It's a free and open source server. Sorry, not server. It's just like Microsoft, but better. It's harder to use, of course, but everything's free, open source. And it sounds like this is as well. And probably they aimed it at Linux in the first place. Does it take a long time? Like, I've watched one of your animated videos to your music, and I think it's about 4.5 minutes long. How long does it take to produce something like this?
About a month, maybe.
Really?
Oh
That's
yeah.
a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of work, especially when you're trying to animate the voice, if you're doing the if you're singing it and you're trying to get the voice to get the lips.
So this is about thinking.
Yeah, lip syncing. And there are things called sprites, and there are mouth sprites, and there's a mouth sprite for each. So, like for N and M and S, the S sound and the sound, and you can there are different ways to make it so you can do a text to speech. You can do
Is that kind of
audio.
automated?
So I normally do text to speech. I tried the audio, so you just take the vocal, for example, and use that to try and animate the mouth, but it gets there and it kind of doesn't, and you always have to edit it. So I think if I've got to edit it anyway, I just may as well do text to speech, and then it's kind of easier to edit when you do text to speech. So
Yeah.
That's how
Totally.
the mouth moves.
It reminds me of, I put subtitles on my videos and it's, I come across the same thing. Sometimes it gets it wrong, you know, and
Yeah.
you have to manually edit it. So I get what you're saying there. But I wonder what your wife, Jo, you know, do you get into the zone like I do when you're doing something like that and nothing can interfere? You know, I just get into the zone and Caroline, my partner, she just goes, well, he's in the zone.
Right.
Is that the case with you?
Oh, heck yeah. Definitely.
Does Joe just like go, okay, he's in the zone, that's it.
Yeah, I'm in my studio, which is just outside of the house. So she really never sees me.
That's why your marriage works so well.
And sometimes I get so focused. She'll tell me something, or my grandson will tell me, or I have to be somewhere, and I just completely forget all about it because I'm so focused. And then I get frustrated when I get interrupted.
Oh yeah, 'cause you're in the zone,
Yeah.
and it's a tricky job. I know this from video editing myself. You just it's so pedantic what you've got to do, and any interruption, you just go, it just throws you out completely.
Exactly. And then you think, where was I? What was I doing?
Yeah, where was I?
Something.
Exactly.
Ah, psh, crap. It's like, oh yeah, that's what I was doing. And then you get into it again. But
Now, Paul, we all grew up in the 60s, you, Joe, and me.
yeah.
I'm going to ask you a rhetorical question, two parts of it. Did you and do you like 60s music, and is your current music reflective of your upbringing with the likes of the Beatles or later on, you know, the Rolling Stones, all that sort of stuff? Did that affect you, and did you like music in the 60s?
Oh, definitely. That's all I listen to today.
But your does what you do today, is that reflective of the influence, let's say, of music from the 60s?
I think
'Cause it doesn't sound like it to me.
it's more 70s.
Ah.
That's when I really started to,
Because
get into.
you get into your teens and that kind of thing.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a teen anymore in the 70s.
You were in your early 20s or something,
Yeah.
but you do change from, you know, from preteen or, you know, teenager to 20s. I love 70, actually 70s music, 40s music and 70s music are
Yeah.
my favorite decades. I have not much time for 60s and definitely not much time for 50s music. I respect these decades of music, but it's the 40s for me. I feel like I'm reincarnated because I feel like I lived in the 40s.
Lots of good stuff back then, for sure.
Yeah, big bands, you know, Blue Eyes, all that sort of stuff. But basically, 70s was a very interesting time for music because I always think the 70s was a kind of a hangover from the 1960s in terms of, you know, the 1969 kind of revolution and anti-Vietnam and all that sort of stuff. And the 70s always feels to me, even though I was a teenager in the 70s, it was like it was, as I look back, it looks like, feels like it was a hangover from the 60s. But the music in the 70s was so different, wasn't it, Paul?
Oh yeah, definitely. The hard rock stuff started happening, and that's what I was into, and fusion and jazz, and not jazz. That sort of pseudo, like Weather Report or Chick Corea, that kind of stuff. I really liked, and John McLaughlin, Mahavishnu, sort of John McLaughlin era. That was probably his early 70s.
Do you
UFO.
sorry, I was we got to go soon. I just want to ask you, do you miss America at all?
No.
That's a short answer. You're very confident. Sorry?
I miss my family,
Of course.
but I don't miss America at all.
Is okay, so and do you love Australia? Are you
Yes, I do.
passionate?
Yep.
Could you know, if you were to look back at your life as a young person, did you ever imagine you'd end up on a country on the, you know, on the other side of the planet?
Nope.
No, neither did I.
I'm not even sure I knew what Australia was. Maybe I heard of
You
it.
thought you didn't think it was
Stuff
Austria.
Tasmania.
So you don't miss America. You live in Australia. You've been here a long time now.
Yep.
Just like myself, I've been here 34 years, come
That's
March
true.
15th. Okay, well, look, it's so good to talk to you. And it's lovely getting your insights into your life along with your wife, Jo, last week. And I think you've passed the test. You're both saying much the same thing. Paul Volta, thank you so much for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio, and we go out with a song called Everybody from The Sign.
We've got you covered.
Finally in this series, the original song parodist and probably the best known is Mr. Lindley Armstrong Jones, better known as Spike Jones. With his band of top-class musicians and manic comedians, he specialized in performing satirical arrangements of popular songs of the day. Ballads and classical works receiving the Jones treatment would be punctuated with gunshots, whistles, cowbells, and outlandish vocals. Through the 1940s and early 1950s, the band recorded under the title Spike Jones and His City Slickers and toured the United States and Canada under the title the Musical Depreciation Review. A typical song of the period receiving the treatment, this one by the Mills Brothers.
You always heard the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all.
Transformed and completely destroyed by the Jones Boys.
You always hurt the one you love, the one you shouldn't hurt at all. You always take the sweet and crush it till the petals fall.
Now, excuse me there, Mr. Carl Grayson. I'll tell this little girl all about this year's situation. Now, honey child, you knows that you always seems to break the, the very kind of soul of our heart with a hasty word that you just can't seem to recall. Honey child, honey lamb, honey baby, honey doll, honey pie. Now then, if this boy, now mind you, I says, if this year boy done broke your heart last night, honey child, honey lamb, honey baby, honey doll, honey pie, is because he love you the most of all.
Crush it till the petals fall. You always break,
crunch,
the kindest heart with a hasty word you can't recall.
Ah, yeah, you old bat.
So if I broke,
crunch,
your heart last night, it's because I love you most of all.
From Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
Henry O'Donovan.
The sun never sets on Bondi Tunes.